T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
FM News Talk 97.1.
Well, good afternoon. I have people sending me pictures outside of Busch Stadium rubbing it in. That's not very nice, is
it?
It's
cruel.
It is cruel.
That's
and
not nice at all.
I'll minimize the bitching about working today, but it really is like the first opening day that I haven't worked in a long, long time, even back to my days in Milwaukee, because we were the Brewers flagship station, WTMJ, and when I was working, I did a morning show up there, but you know, we did. I'll never forget, man, being at County Stadium. You think it's cold today, which, by the way, it is.
Thank you.
County Stadium, when that thing existed in the parking lot at like 8 in the morning or whatever, I probably got there earlier because I was doing mornings. It was just brutal. And sometimes it would snow. How is everyone today?
Good.
Good. And we have a, you know, baseball is one thing, but we have something far more important, and that's the Ketchup Challenge this afternoon. And we kind of tipped our hand on this yesterday. Do you want to explain what we're going to do? And Sue, by the way, you take this seriously, because here I was, and I had not forgotten. We talked about it yesterday. For those people who were not here, there is a ketchup shortage in this country. It's actually real. One of the issues is those little packs are hard to come by because restaurants went away from the bottles, the squeeze bottles, and they went to the packages because of COVID, and then there's not enough of them. But we got into this discussion about the quality of ketchup, and I insisted that Hunt's is the brand that I would stick with.
I thought you said Hunt's.
Sorry, what am I doing
here?
But
Hunt's, me out.
Hunt's is acceptable, but then the other types I'm not sure of. So Sue texted me this morning, and the plan was I was going to bring the Heinz, you were going to bring the Hunt's, and then she said, oh, I think she sniffed out potential cheating, and I didn't even think about cheating, but believe me, I would have given it some thought
and would have
attempted to cheat had I been given the opportunity, but you said no. If you bring your ketchup from home, it's going to be cold, right?
That's
because it's in the refrigerator.
And mine is fresh from Schnucks, and it's not going to be cold, and there's no way I'm letting you identify it by, you know, temperature.
Right. So I brought two more bottles in today.
I wonder do that. Okay, we now have six.
So I went to Fields Foods on my way in, and I bought an organic bottle of ketchup with some name I wasn't familiar with. And then French's has a ketchup.
Okay,
didn't really
this
know
is
that.
Great.
French's has mustard, but I didn't know they had ketchup.
I didn't either, because the two that you bought are not the ones I bought. So here's what we have. Heinz, Hunt's. The two that you bought, French's and whatever the other one was. What was the other one?
It's French's some organic.
And Willow, organic.
It's like Willow, Wilford.
That's it. I got Brooks, right? Locally Brooks, the one from the Illinois side, and one other one. Oh, I want to say it's Red Gold. Red Gold tomato ketchup.
Oh, sure.
We have like five.
We have
five.
Six. Six, Mark Ridden.
All right.
I brought in four. You brought in two. We now have six.
Okay, I was going to wait until a little after four. We may just want to get started now and roll through the whole show and cancel the guests if we've had six ketchups.
Probably
we're
the
need
best
a little
idea.
Time this afternoon.
Well, we may just do four that I feel like, because I want to make sure that they're good. But you understand that Andrew and I have worked with Mark Close, who used to make these proclamations, right? He would say, I am the best whatever. Andrew, help me.
Yeah, no, he would say, I could identify them by smell and sight alone. That kind of thing.
He would make ridiculous statements.
Right. And then we'd have to call him on it because we can't just let him get away with that.
So that's what we had a flashback to, and I'm like, oh no, we take this seriously. There will be no temperature differences. Everything will be the same. I even brought in my own plates so that the ketchup can be highlighted by the yellow plate.
I think you said when you guys have done this a little bit before, but you just did like a scoop of ketchup. I decided to bring fries. So I went to Hardee's and I bought two large fries. They'll be maybe a little lukewarm by the time we try this, but we'll zap them in the microwave real quick at 4 o'clock.
Ooh, Hardee's fries are little, good.
Yeah, I think their fries are good too.
Oh, so good.
Right.
Please understand.
We'll see.
Andrew
a little soggy though here.
Is an expert on all fast food.
I am.
Yeah.
It's
my specialty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I worked on the rare occasion that I ever worked for a living outside of radio, and it didn't happen very often. I worked for U.S. Sprint for like 4 months in 1987. That was because I had a girlfriend up in Chicago, and she was super hot, so we decided to – I was living up there for a while, and that was worth it even though it was a terrible job, but I came back and I did radio. But I worked at the Chesterfield Mall in – I think it was the summer of 1984 because it was the only summer that I worked after my freshman year, the only summer I came home. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait a second. When you come home after college, you have to abide by mom and dad's rules and all that nonsense. So, which is fair, by the way. And I you know, I do that for my kids now.
But it's a shock when you're that age.
It is a shock. So I worked at Chesterfield Mall, Camelot Music. Do you guys remember?
That's
Andrew's too
awesome.
Young to remember that.
I know the name. I'm familiar
That's
with
awesome.
The name.
Well, this was back when you had record stores and you had cassettes, and I was working in the record business and dabbling, and that's besides radio and television. I thought my career was going to take that sort of focus, and the record folks I was working with said, "We'll get some retail experience." And I'd never worked. I mean, I think I told you the other day, I cut lawns when I was a kid, so I didn't really know anything about that. But I took that job, and the thing about Camelot Music is they specialize, they tried to specialize. Sue Thomas comes in, and she's looking for a particular record. I wasn't even allowed on the cash register. I was the guy who would find the record for you and recommend.
Cool.
I would also do the stocking and all that nonsense. But this is how it relates to Hardee's. So they would give you, at the time, I was offered a half-hour lunch non-paid, okay, or 15 minutes so you get paid. So that seemed pretty obvious to me as a poor college student. I took the 15 minutes paid. But the only place that I could go in that damn mall to make it within 15 minutes was Hardee's. So I essentially ate at Hardee's every damn day the summer of 1984. And then it was maybe decades before I went back to Hardee's just because I got so sick of it. But there's one near my house, so I do occasionally swing into Hardee's. And then you know what I did too when I got the French fries? I thought, well, because I wanted to give this whole ketchup thing a bit of a generic flair too, if we get one of those crappy generic packets. So I said, hey, can you give me ketchup? She gave me a whole bag full, but they were Heinz. So they're the regular ketchup.
Also interesting that she gave you a whole bag full given the information we received yesterday.
I thought so too, because there were and I will say this, during the last year, I don't know about that Hardee's. I don't do a lot of fast food, and when I do it's typically for my daughter. But and she likes ketchup. But I remember that there were some places that would restrict. They'd only give you like two packets. And if you'd ask for more, they might give you more, but they'd still like give you like two more packets where it used to be. And this is how this woman was today. You just take a whole handful and you put it in the bag, right?
Dozens.
By the way, Schnucks has a ton of ketchup. So it must really be the packets.
It has to be the packets,
right? Mm. I mean, it was just a wide, vast array of everything.
So another little food experience that I had today. So I went out to lunch with we have, it's a dynamic that's a little unusual here at the radio station, because Andrew, do you even know, you guys know how many radio stations do we have now in this building? It's a lot.
I want to say we have six now.
Six? Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought it was more than that. So
five
because
or six.
We keep acquiring stations. There's some folks here in the building that I'm just getting to know, and we don't have most of the staff back. Well, most of them are at opening day right now, but they're working at home. So Nate Dixon is our new general sales manager, and I've never met Nate before, and I've just seen him on Zoom calls, and you know, he's the guy that's kind of in charge of all the advertising at all the stations, and we just wanted to make a connection one-on-one. So we thought today was a good day. I meet him at Starbucks on Hanley, like Hanley and Wydown. I'm not a Starbucks guy. I don't drink coffee. I rather dislike it. I'm a Diet Coke guy, but I buy it for my wife. But I haven't attempted to go into a Starbucks in a long time. It's the drive-thru, typically. And Starbucks drive-thru is pretty quick, even if the line is long. But anyway, we go in there, we're and it's cold. And Nate shows up in shorts, and he's got a long-sleeve, like, polo shirt on. He's a bigger guy. I'm relatively, I'd say I'm lean. I'm pretty skinny right now. I haven't been my whole life. So we go into the Starbucks. We order the food, and I just get a bottle of water because I don't drink coffee. Well, I didn't realize this, and apparently if you go to Starbucks, there's no seating allowed indoors.
Oh, really?
To this day. Did you know that?
I didn't. I'm not a Starbucks person either.
So they have all these tables, and every table has a sign that says, you know, not available. I thought there one would say not available, the next one would say available, but that's not the case. And I asked the guy, I'm like, well, what's going on here? And he said, well, it's a corporate thing, so I think it's partially corporate, but also partially St. Louis County. But that made no sense to me whatsoever, why you couldn't have some indoor dining in there. But again, if Starbucks is deciding this. So anyway, we go outside. I freeze my ass off out there. And I'm sitting there trying to have this meeting with Nate about advertising and clients and all this, you know, the rare time that I have to sit down and actually do something that's somewhat official outside of just blabbing on the radio. And my teeth were chattering.
Yeah.
I was so calm. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. I'm like trying to get through the sentences. And I'm finally at the end. And he even admitted it. Like, it's kind of cold. I'm like, dude, I'm freezing. We got to go. I know he was going to the game, and I ended up going home for a little while, but absolutely cold. I actually thought about jumping in the hot tub when I got home. I was that cold, but I thought that was interesting. I have some other, so let's see what I can do here, because I have to adjust my time on where we are. There's really interesting information about a lockdown in Ireland that I wanted to get to. Let me do this one real quick and see if you guys have any reaction. Did you see the story? This is a New York Times story this morning. This is basically how I started my morning, and I tweeted this out with a bit of a confused emoji, if you will. You know the blank stare emoji?
Yes.
The one where, and I'm a little confused about the blank stare emoji, because the blank stare emoji that I've always used ever since we've had emojis doesn't have like that pink stuff on the emoji's face.
Yeah, but the blush.
Yeah, so I don't want the blush.
No.
Can't I just use the straight?
Yeah.
They don't allow that anymore. I tried to do it this morning, and the blush thing came in there.
What?
I just want the staring into space type thing.
Yeah.
Well, that was not available.
Are you saying the blush isn't manly? I mean, who cares?
I don't think it's not that. It's that the emoji that I'm trying to emit, the emojification, is that a word, is just the blank stare, because
fair
I don't
enough.
Know what this is about. Well, here's the story. The headline is this: $2.1 billion for undocumented workers signals New York's progressive shift. When the coronavirus arrived in New York City a year ago, it hit enclaves of undocumented immigrants with a fury, killing thousands and wiping out the service and construction jobs that kept many families afloat. By the way, it did this to other people, too, who are here legally, who actually pay taxes and all that stuff. But they're focusing on, we used to call them illegal immigrants. You can't say that anymore. Lifelines like unemployment insurance and federal stimulus checks were out of reach because undocumented people are ineligible for most government aid. I'm going to adjust the wording here for the New York Times. Lifelines like unemployment insurance and federal stimulus checks were out of reach because illegal aliens should not be eligible for government aid. So they've relied, according to the Times, on food pantries, lenient landlords, and loans from friends. Now, I get that there are a lot of service workers in New York and elsewhere that are undocumented and don't qualify for this. But think about someone who's sitting on the sidelines in New York and their family has struggled. They're a restaurant worker. They're here legally. Their family is here legally. And all of a sudden, they're cutting. This is a stunning amount. Undocumented workers could receive up to $15,600, the equivalent of $300 per week for the last year, if they can verify that they were state residents, ineligible for federal unemployment benefits, and lost income as a result of the pandemic. And others can still get a lower sum, up to $3,200. So this was something that was pushed by the Democratic-controlled Senate and Assembly in New York. A lot of people didn't like it at all. There were some Democrats that expressed some concern as well, like John Manion. He's one of five Democrats that said, you know, look, this is, well, one of the problems that he had with it is, how can you administer a program like this without issues even getting the money to the right people? This is
exactly.
going to be ripe for fraud. And what happens if the money's not there, or if it's just a pile of money, then where does it go? But here's, you know, they have people in here that are quoted, like Giovanna Carano. There were days I couldn't sleep, to be honest with you, says Giovanna Carano, a house cleaner and supported her two children in Yonkers for more than a decade. Mrs. Carano, who immigrated from Peru, resumed working a few days a week to this year, only to fall sick with COVID herself. She said she paid taxes and asked that the government recognize the contributions that she and other workers made to the economy. Now, there's nothing in this story that says, hey, Giovanna, why didn't you take the path for legal citizenship that might be available to you? Because you have a lot of folks, and here's a construction worker that's quoted in this story. At the very bottom of the story, they actually focus on people that might be affected in the other way. We're survivors of the virus, and we're only here because other people helped us out. This is the guy. This guy supports the illegals, too. There was one quote in here that was like that quote that they had to have almost from a real person that was affected by this. Where did that go? Because I swear to God, I found
there's
one quote in here.
There's only one in the whole story.
No, there's only one in the whole story. Right. There's only one in the whole story. And now I can't even find it.
Wow.
Oh, wait. Here it is. State Senator Jessica Rump. No, she's talking about the, I've met neighbors who have not been able to pay rent, put food on the table, or been able to provide their children with a laptop when a public school has not been able to provide one. But that's also people who are here legally. So correct. I guess the consideration is all the other people got money from the government with the stimulus checks. And this is New York. Something like this would not happen in Missouri. I guess if people are okay with it, there was a controversy, of course. This happened when I was in Wisconsin, too, where they legalized or they required or they allowed for illegal undocumented immigrants to have driver's licenses. And that was controversial. This one, though, so the question then politically, is this going to be something that comes back to haunt some of the people who, you know, approve this? Because a lot of people are going to sit back and say, wait a second. What about, how is this even possible when my family's struggling as well? So there wasn't any backlash to the driver's license issue, but that didn't cost $2 billion.
Right.
And this one cost $2 billion with a B. So that's New York. And this is, by the way, for those people interested, this is what's going to happen now to our city, which I've renamed Portland after Tishara Jones was elected the other night, because we're going to see more and more of this. You're not going to see it at the state legislature because of the makeup. All right, we're going to talk about a bunch of different things here. Kyle Salmon, who's a senior contributor to The Federalist, critical race theory. It's something I've talked about quite a bit. If you're not familiar, we'll educate you.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, hang on. The Great Ketchup Challenge coming up a little after 4 on 97.1 FM Talk. Kyle Salmon is a senior contributor to The Federalist, and he wrote about critical race theory. We're going to kind of update you on what that is if you're not familiar. It's kind of an issue that's near and dear to my heart. He's an attorney from Philadelphia, the host of the podcast, The Conservative Mind. Salmon says that critical race theory is to the left what QAnon is to the right. I think he might be right on that. Kyle, how are you?
Good, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I just think this is a really important issue, and it seems like every day there is something in the news that is sort of related to this. Chris Rufo has done some great work on this. I don't know if you know Chris or follow him, but I think he was really someone who put a lot of this stuff on the radar of other conservatives, if you will. Let's start just with what is critical race theory? Because I think a fair number of people listening right now, they may have heard the term. What does it mean?
Well, it kind of grows out of the critical theory of the new left in the 1960s. It's it's this weird combination of sort of saying that everything about race and life is a social construct, that words shape things, and that, but it also has this element of the idea that everything is tied together by a legacy of white supremacy, and all of the things that are, all the power structures of government are not really about right and wrong. They're just about keeping a certain group in power. And it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. There's a book called Cynical Theories by James Lindsay and Helen Pluckrose that really explains it very well. But it's kind of out there. It came out of the academia and is now just was kind of percolating there under everyone's noses for a while, and now has been unleashed into the real world.
Well, let me offer a few examples just for some people who might be a little in the clouds right now. You have public schools across this country that force, for example, first graders to deconstruct their racial and sexual identities and then rank themselves according to their power and privilege. That's a first grader. Yeah. There is a curriculum that teaches that all white people play a part in perpetuating systemic racism. That's a big part of critical race theory. White teachers have had to admit that they are guilty of, because these courses get presented in corporate America and in government, but they have had to admit that they are guilty of spirit murdering, whatever that is, black children. White parents are told that they must become white traitors and advocate for white abolition. These are all real. I'm not making any of this up. And by the way, it's not just isolated incidents. As you know, this stuff has run rampant. Now, I think Rufo did a good job, and I think the president, former president, did a good job at shutting some of this stuff down. But now, it's Katie by the door, right?
Yeah, and I agree with you about Rufo's work. He's really done a great job of exposing a lot of this. But yeah, it's not just in like one private school in one hippie town. It's getting everywhere into public schools, into big corporations, into government offices, and it's the way it's being presented. And that's what I wrote about the other day. It's not like this is a theory that's up for debate. When it's presented as a dogma and as something that, this is what we believe now, and you have to. And if you raise objections to it, or question any of it, even if you question it from what was traditionally a liberal point of view of, hey, aren't we all just equal? Why don't we just treat everyone the same? Why are we so hung up on this all the time? You're not engaged like someone having a conversation. You're engaged as a heretic, as somebody who's a troublemaker, and is going to be shut down.
By the way, I think I would love for this to be debated, and I think you would too, and I think Chris Rufo would, because if you would actually get this out and debate, then people would really kind of know what this is about. Now, what you wrote, Kyle, this is not really a surprise when you think about it, but there were some changes made at even the Harvard Kennedy School, right, about critical race theory.
Right. They introduced a two-week course for all incoming students about basically a crash course in critical race theory, and it was introduced as Harvard's offering this new course, but then when you read into it, it says Harvard's requiring this new course for everyone who comes in, and that's another part in the dogmatic angle. And what they said is, this is their words, the intensive two-week course was developed with the stated goal of ensuring that students learn how and why race and racism are not just aberrational artifacts of the past, but lie at the heart of the American project. So what they're teaching these kids, and these aren't even kids, these are young adults who are taking a master's program, is they're saying if you want to get this degree, you have to sit through this course that talks about how this country is just deeply racist and can never be anything but racist. And I think America's kind of too obsessed with what goes on at the Ivy League most of the time, but that's where a lot of our political leaders come out of and a lot of our corporate leaders come out of. So if this is what they're all having to go through, I mean, it's sort of ensuring that these people who want to be a part of the rulers, so to speak, our leaders, are all being indoctrinated in the idea that this country is rotten to the core.
Well, I think, the thing about that, they should call it White Guilt 101, by the way. You might be right about Harvard, and I think we do kind of get bent out of shape when the Ivy League schools do something, but this is so well beyond Harvard. That's one of the things that I've learned in the past, certainly the past year and a half, that some of these things have been really, really pervasive in school districts across the country. We had a situation in Springfield, Missouri, where it was being used. I don't think anything really that has made a lot of news around here, but it's amazing how often these courses are taught in corporate America. And I work for a corporation, you don't have a lot of say in this stuff. You either pass those tests or take those tests that your HR HR department requires you to take, or you probably don't have a job.
Right, and that's what the problem is, and that's why a lot of people compare it to a new religion. But I think it's not quite like that, because a religion, you can't always argue about it. I mean, if you believe, you believe, and if you don't, you don't. But it's also about something that can't ultimately be proved, not in this life anyway. But what they're arguing about is they're saying things that are factually true that can be disproved, and they're presenting it as though it's a religious dogma, and that's really troubling because you know you present this course, you know, if you come into your work and HR says you've got to attend this training and this seminar, and they're saying stuff that you know isn't true, and they're making you, you know, condemn yourself, condemn your coworkers, you know, over things that you think are nonsense, you can't argue against it, and that's why I said it was like more like the left's QAnon.
Yeah. Well, you can't. You'd be almost not only can you not. You'd be afraid to, right?
Sure. When all your bosses are lined up on one side, and your politicians are too. I mean, we would love for everyone to just be able to, you know, risk it all and be brave and be a heroic character. But you know, people can't afford to get fired.
No. Kyle Salmon, senior contributor to The Federalist. I'll use myself as an example here. It's even somewhat risky to venture into territories like this. And I've said this more times in the last 8 months than I have in my entire career, that I've never really been afraid. People ask all the time as a talk show host, do they tell you what to say? Are there things you can't? No. The answer is no. I've done this for 3+ decades now. But the problem is that answer kind of became yes in the last year.
Yeah, I didn't write that much about it before, just not because they ever told me what to write either. You know, I submit things to the Federalist and other papers, and they never tell me you can't write about this. But I there's going to be blowback. You know that you're going to get pressure from outside. And I mean, I'm lucky as a freelancer that most of my work is not determined by bosses, but I still do work for different companies, and you know, I try to keep that separate. But at a certain point, you know, if people want to cancel you, if it ever caught the attention of the woke mobs, it'll happen. And that's something that we didn't used to think about in America, but now we do increasingly.
You know, it's a situation. I don't know what your reaction would be to this, Kyle, but there's definitely an issue. And I've been lectured by people. I've been advised by friends, for example, who are African American. I think that you need to expose yourself to different races. There's been some things maybe I wish I could have corrected in my life. But this goes so far. I guess there is no middle ground for people to say, look, maybe we should think about walking in someone else's skin. But this is so radical. And I would offer St. Louis, Missouri, and Ferguson, Missouri, as an example of where ground zero was when we started turning backwards in race relations in this country. And then you just add every incident to that list. George Floyd last year, and critical race theory plays into all this stuff. And I think it's actually backfiring, which shouldn't happen either, but I think it is.
I think so. Well, I think that's part of the problem, too, is when they force such a radical agenda, it is going to inevitably have backlash. And part of the problem is now you're telling people concentrate on race so much, think
right.
about it so much. Well, you know, I think we made a lot of progress in this country by not thinking about race constantly, by trying to think past race and just see each other as individuals and try to get along with our neighbors, whatever they look like or wherever.
I think we elected a black president. Can you confirm that? Twice.
I've heard that.
Twice, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, and I think all of that kind of progress and improvement on how the country used to be is through that sort of race blind, like classical liberalism.
You don't get anywhere with me if you start from the position that we've made no progress in this country. And by the way, even President Obama admitted that we had made great strides. Is it perfect? Far from it. We see too many outrageous examples of racism. I get that. I think a lot of people get that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you start to push people in this direction, and, you know, the wokeism is just, I guess that's here to stay, especially based on what's happened in the last couple of weeks. But there is going to be, you know, a time for that to be rejected. And I don't know how that manifests itself. It manifested itself with Donald J. Trump the last time. So we'll see where this takes us.
Yeah, that's right. It's ground I didn't think we'd be treading down again as a country, you know, of separating ourselves by race, you know, purposely. And you're right, that does, you know, there's certainly ways we can improve. I think the best way to improve is to live up to America's old values. You know, I mean, we had these ideas that all men are created equal. And when Jefferson wrote that in 1776, it wasn't being lived out in every place. But it's a lot closer to being lived out now, and that's because of people living up to America's values, not trying to destroy them.
Well, and this I found this example, too, before we were doing this chat earlier. The University of Nevada, Reno, has implemented segregated dorm communities, telling the and the group that did this is YAF News, Young Americas, telling them that white students are not considered to fill spots for the safety of the students' participants. Were you dialed into that one?
I heard that, and that there was another school, I think, in Missouri around the time of Ferguson that was asking for that, although I don't think the university granted it. That just seems wild to anyone who's studied American history and who knows that, you know, they're calling the voting rights law in Georgia the new Jim Crow. Well, what would be more the new Jim Crow than segregated schools, which is what you're talking about? I mean, that's nuts. And
you summed it up. That's nuts. Absolutely. But I guess the white supremacists are too dangerous out there. Kyle, I appreciate your time. This is a big issue, and I hope it doesn't go away because I think it needs to have a lot of light shined upon it. Is that even right grammatically? We'll go with it.
I think so. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Kyle, take care. Thank you.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
On the topic of the Second Amendment, Kevin Cummins coming up here. He is a firearms education and training certified instructor, and we're going to get some reaction to what Joe Biden did today on guns. I'm thrilled to welcome back a great sponsor to my show, and that's Pet Supplies Plus in Bowen. I met John and Jeannie Sullivan at a Blues game in 2008, and that developed into a relationship and a friendship that lasts until this day. They've helped me with what I call the Reardon Zoo. We've usually had three dogs, three cats. We have three cats, two dogs currently, and they take great care of us. Every once in a while, here's the best thing I can say about Pet Supplies Plus. When you walk in there, if you need help, you're going to get help. If you have questions about food or anything else, they're going to give you that advice. You can walk into what I would refer to as a big box pet store. You walk around that store, because every once in a while I've had to resort to it, just in an emergency. Walk around the store three times and you won't even see anybody. That's not going to happen at Pet Supplies Plus. They have an extensive line, dog and cat food, treats, the largest natural selection in the area. Check them out. They're in Baldwin, right at New Baldwin and Manchester Roads, where they care about you and your pet. Pet Supplies Plus, by the way, Pals Pet Rescue is going to be at the store this Saturday, 10 to 3, with dogs and cats available for adoption. No more from me. We're kind of full. But check out Pet Supplies Plus. Well, we're going to talk about guns here. It's not more important than ketchup, which comes up after 4 o'clock, as we'll do the taste test that we alluded to yesterday. So Joe Biden did something today on guns, and we heard about this yesterday. Executive orders, I'm still a little confused. They, I guess, will be rolled out with more specifics in 30 days. He directed the Justice Department to issue a proposed rule to stop the proliferation of what's called ghost guns. We're going to get into that a little bit here. Kevin Cummins is with Advantage Firearms Education and Training. He has been nice enough to give me pepper spray for my niece, for example, who is a student at SLU. And we want to get my wife in there for some firearms education. She's interested, Kevin, but she's so busy. How are you this afternoon?
Doing great, Mark. How about you?
Good. By the way, great picture. He sent me a picture when Uncle Ted was on last week, and you said you had a chance to meet him over the years, too, so that was cool. Let me play what Biden said today on these ghost gun things, and I've never heard that term, but here's what he said.
Want to rein in the proliferation of so-called ghost guns. These are guns that are homemade, built from a kit, that include directions on how to finish the firearm. You can go buy the kit. They have no serial numbers. So when they show up at a crime scene, they can't be traced.
All right, so how big of a deal is that?
Virtually nothing. It's a smokescreen.
That's
yes,
what I
there
thought.
Is.
I mean, really?
Well, the whole thing he gave was a smokescreen. First off, to address ghost guns, what you're buying is a part that needs to be machined. So you need to be a machinist in order to do it, and you have to have the lathe and the proper machining tools to do it. So you and I can't go out and just start, you know, taking a block of aluminum and machining it and drilling the holes and everything so it'll accept the firing pin.
Yeah, so in other words, criminals are not making ghost guns to commit
crimes. Of course not. They're buying something on the street.
Right, right. Okay.
But the two big things that he talked about that really are substantive, even though he disclaimed them a little bit, was getting rid of the PLCAA, the Lawful Protection and Commerce Act, which the whole thing about that was designed to make sure that you couldn't sue the firearm manufacturers and the ammunition manufacturers for them putting out a good product but was misused by a criminal down the line. Then the whole thing about that is they put that in, President Bush signed that in, so that the industry couldn't be bankrupted by frivolous lawsuits.
And he basically just retracted that?
Well, he says he wants to get rid of it. He can't get rid of it.
He can't do that by executive order.
Correct.
Okay.
But what he's saying, he said that was his main priority. If nothing else comes out of what he proposed today, this is the one that he wants. Well, heck yes, that's what he wants, because he's saying that, well, the gun industry can't be sued for anything. Well, that's baloney. If they are liable in the mismanufacture of a product, it's unsafe or it's not done, you know, correctly, then they are liable, just they can be sued. But you can't make up cases that are just there to put the, you know, sue the firearms industry into oblivion. That was a litigation that was tacked on to the tobacco industry, if you remember, and all the stuff that happened in the tobacco industry. People took a lesson from that and started going after the firearms manufacturers so they could have suits. The gun companies would be facing multiple cases in multiple jurisdictions simultaneously. They never intended to win any of that stuff. They only needed to keep the suits moving long enough to bleed the industry of the financial resources to fight the meritless litigation.
Right. Kevin, I'm going to get your reaction to this, something else. And I was on vacation with this when this happened, so I don't remember hearing about it. But the shooter in Boulder a few weeks ago used a pistol modified with an arm brace. So here's what the president said today.
We want to treat pistols modified with stabilizing braces with the seriousness they deserve. A stabilizing brace hooked in a pencil essentially makes that pistol a hell of a lot more accurate than a mini rifle.
All right, so I'm not really familiar with the stabilizing brace, so help me out, educate me on this.
Okay, so you've got a few rifles that you use to go hunting.
Right.
Okay, they've got a buttstock on them.
Yes.
Imagine taking that buttstock off and putting just a simple pistol grip on it. So and that's what they have. They sell ARs, modern sporting rifles. And incidentally, for those in the audience who might not know, AR stands for Armalite Rifle. It's the Armalite company.
Right,
correct.
Right.
So they sell these AR pistols. So it is a 223-556 pistol. Well, somebody decided that if they built a brace for that, it was SIG, and they built a brace that's just like a wrist brace, like if you got an injury, you put a nylon brace on your arm. And then that attaches to the pistol grip that it gives you a little more stability in firing. And as you well know, the whole thing is line up the front sight with the rear sights and press the trigger and don't move it. Well, it's going to move a little bit because there's a heck of a lot of recoil.
Right,
if there's
right.
nothing to absorb all that recoil, it's going to go up your arm. So therefore, it does stabilize it a little bit. But again, this is one instance out of, you know, how many thousands of people have these products. And one person misuses something, and so it's the old throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You know, one person does something wrong, so we're going to totally turn everything upside down and penalize the law-abiding citizens because he wants to do this.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's beyond, and it's not just necessarily penalizing the law-abiding citizens. What he wants to do is just do something so people feel better, so they know that he did something on guns and they see the headlines. I think that's really what it's about. There's nothing here solving an issue of violent crime or
Of course, he's out there to score political points. He's not making anybody safer. This is all about appeasing the people who want all this gun control.
By the way, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but on the bump stock thing, did they ever do something on that? That seemed to me to be a reasonable restriction to ban the bump stocks, but that's just me.
Yeah, they did. They did ban them after, I think we talked about when they were talking about it, but they actually did ban them. Again, I'm on both sides of that. I've never owned one. I don't see the need, because all you're doing is blowing ammo up. And these days, you can't afford to waste that kind of ammo because, you know, ammo is made of unobtainium. You just can't get it. But if people like to do it, they blow up, you know, dump a mag real fast, almost as though it were a full auto. I don't have a problem with not having them because it doesn't really do anything, but it just has people have fun with it. Nobody's really used them except the one guy in Las Vegas to do something bad. And that's why the original Clinton gun ban sunsetted, and it wasn't renewed, because law enforcement came up, led by the FBI and other federal agencies, that said this law for the last 10 years has done absolutely nothing to, you know, hinder crime.
Well, if you want proof here that this was just done for political theater, this is the CNN story that says this. The actions amount to the first real steps by Biden's administration to combat gun violence. That's a joke, but the moves are limited in scope and fall short of the steps that Biden has vowed to pressure Congress to take. Still, they fulfilled his pledge last month to take common sense steps on his own. Kevin, keep us posted on this. Glad to have you back. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you later.
Kevin Cummins on 97.1 FM Talk. Ketchup challenge coming up. I'm so excited.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.